And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. OTA number one in the books. Pat Shurmur spoke to the media a short while ago. We'll recap some of the highlights from practice. We'll go over what Pat Shurmur had to say, and we'll get to your phone calls. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. So Pat Shurmur addressed the media after practice, and he said that Odell Beckham, right now, they're taking it slow, Paul, which is understandable because they want him to get fully healthy, and they're not looking for him to re-aggravate anything. We saw him work out, took part in some individual drills, and looked to be moving okay from what we've seen.
Yeah, he did about 20 minutes at the start of the session, which involved all the stretching and the calisthenics and the warming up stuff, and then he did the individual drills where the quarterbacks are just throwing to the receivers one-on-one without having any defensive necessarily impedance involved. And I'll be honest with you, he was fluid. He looked excited. He looked energetic. He looked smooth. He did some cutting.
Zigzagging.
Did some, you know, horizontal movement. And you know what? That's another step in the right direction for him. Because as you may remember, Lance, the last time he was here when they had the voluntary minicamp, he was not allowed to cut. He was on the backfields with the trainers, just doing some straight sprints, doing, you know, a few calisthenics, limbering up, but nothing to the degree where he would actually run any routes or do any type of change of direction stuff. That we saw this morning, and that's a good sign.
It's a sign of progression and a step in the right direction as they try to near training camp to maybe get him on the field with the pads on and so forth.
And then they held him out for the rest of the
practice session. They get into team-oriented type of drills.
You know, first hurdle cleared.
With respect to the offensive line, Pat Shurmur spoke about Nate Solder and what he's brought to the team, and also the fact that, you know, he and Eric Flowers, as they were walking off the field from practice, there was a lot of interaction between the two. And I know a lot of people were anticipating when Flowers shows up, you know, how would he look at his perhaps battle at the right tackle position, and the two of them seem to be chatting it up both on and off the field.
Well, I don't think there's any question that one of the things the Giants tried to do is make sure I don't knock off that bottle of water from the table.
That would be priority number one.
One of the things that Soldier was brought here to do, in addition to be the stalwart at left tackle, was to also bring some of that Patriots professionalism, if you will, into the offensive line room, because he's been there. He's done it at a very high level out of a program that we all respect as far as NFL people are concerned. And so, you know, if he can kind of be a big brother, if you will, you know, let's face it, Bobby Hart was Eric Flowers' best friend on the team and in that room. If Nate Solder is going to take it upon himself, whether or not he was instructed to do so, to try to show Eric Flowers the guiding light, that can only be a positive for the Giants. And if Flowers is going to be receptive to it and not only be a better player on the field but also a better guy in the locker room and help out some chemistry with that offensive line, the Giants can only appreciate what that might bring to the table.
As far as the rest of the offensive line, Will Hernandez got some reps with the first team at left guard, Patrick Omame as well. And this is no surprise, Paul. They're going to mix and match players until they get to the point where they feel they have found the best five in the ideal combination.
Yeah, we saw a little bit of feistiness out of Hernandez against B.J. Goodson.
Two young guys.
Yeah, for just a moment there. But nothing, you know, to be spoken of in that there's no contact in these OTA drills. So it was just a little bit of a little abrasiveness.
Well, because sometimes guys get the itch to, you know, perhaps embrace the physicality even though it's not allowed within the OTA period. Speaking of young guys, Eli Apple is going to speak to the media a little bit later on today, but Pat Shurmur was asked about Eli Apple. And once again, what Shurmur emphasized is clean slate for everyone. And he said that when he addressed the team, he made that clear, Eli Apple included. And he said Eli Apple's been here every single day. He has been engaged in the activities. And anything that Pat Shurmur may have heard whispers when he wasn't here, he is not seeing any of that in terms of how Eli Apple has conducted his business.
No, and in fact, Eli Apple will be addressing the media with a short media briefing momentarily. What can you say? He's been out there doing everything they've asked him to do. And quite frankly, much like last offseason, he's looked pretty good. From what you could tell, he seems confident, assertive. He has the skill set. We already know that from his rookie season. So, you know, all that needs to be corrected, if you will, with Eli Apple is stuff that's not visible on the practice field. And only time will tell if that's going to be the case once the Giants get to training camp and then the preseason and the regular season. But right now, the guy's skills have clearly not diminished. I mean, he's a young player who's entering his third NFL season. Why should they?
It's a show-me league. So, you know, guys are not going to really make the true statement until we get on the football field and embrace the physicality and actually get involved in games. But right now, obviously, the coaching staff is monitoring these players and making sure that, you know, everybody is following protocol and keeping themselves engaged within the program. In terms of some of the highlights from today's practice, the quarterbacks alternated, which is no surprise. You have Eli Manning, you have Davis Webb, you have Kyle Loletta, you also have Alex Tanny, who we talked about on previous shows.
Tanny was running third team, by the way. Loletta was running fourth.
Davis Webb threw a really nice ball down the right sideline to Khalif Raymond. He could not hold on to it. But, you know, from what Pat Shurmur said, and he's always been asked about Davis Webb because this narrative is never going to end.
No.
Said that he's been continuing to show progress and he looked good today. But once again, and this is important to emphasize no matter how many times we talk about all the quarterbacks, you can only take so much away during individual drills.
Correct.
Okay? This is not necessarily the end-all, be-all, and a sign of what's yet to come, a sign of what yet is going to improve moving forward. It's simply slight progression day in and day out. That's all it is.
For me, the play of the day was Davis Webb's 50-yard bomb down the left sideline on a fly pattern to Roger Lewis. Could not have been put any more perfectly. And you know, he had the nice throw to Raymond, which Raymond could not hold on to. That's on the receiver, not on Davis Webb. Webb was extremely sharp today. He looked really, really good. But then again, he usually does. So that was not a surprise. Other plays of the day for me, B.J. Goodson over the middle, deflecting an Eli Manning pass and coming up with the interception. That drew a lot of rave reviews from his fellow teammates who applauded and yelled and screamed rather loudly. And by the way, it was a loud, spirited OTA practice. A lot of energy out there for guys who, you know, are basically going through the motions. I mean, that's what OTAs
are.
Well,
you would hope to see that. It's OTA number one.
That is true.
If they don't have the energy today, Paul, I think we're all in trouble.
Then there was another tip pass by O'Malley, who is one of the guys competing. Ryan O'Malley trying to compete as a backup tight end. He tipped the ball and a really nice job intercepted by Chandler. He's a free agent rookie out of Temple. Who has quite a story and has come back from a lot of adversity in his career. Anyway, he wound up, I'm trying to find his first name now. I'm forgetting what his first name is. Chandler. I'm forgetting his first name.
Let's see here. Well, while you say that, the other thing that I wanted to add, and I'll look that up to confirm, is Ray Armstrong also had a very nice deflection in the flat. And he obviously is one of the guys that was on the team briefly last year, and he's back in the mix competing at that linebacker position. So that's somebody, obviously, to keep close tabs of moving forward as well. Sean Chandler. Yes.
There you go. So he made a really nice interception off of the O'Malley deflection, which went off his fingertips. It was a nicely thrown ball, and it wound up being a pick. So those were the highlights. We did see, as you mentioned, Hernandez play some right guard and some left guard, mostly left guard, though, with the first team.
Yep.
That was interesting. Lorenzo Carter, which I thought was also kind of fun to watch, they had him dropping in coverage. And he showed his mobility and his quickness and his athleticism again, and he was staying with guys 10, 15 yards downfield. You know, because it's OTAs and there's no contact, you're not going to see a lot of heavy blitzing because, after all, what's the point? You know, you can't contact.
No, it's a great
you
point.
You can't hit anybody, so what's the why
Which
bother?
Which is why you should work on dropping guys back in coverage.
Exactly. So, and I thought Carter did a very nice job in his drills, playing as the right outside stand-up linebacker. You know, again, we talk about that position. You're going to be a stand-up, sometimes going to have a hand in the dirt. It's going to happen. But he was standing up today and did a really nice job. So, you know, those were some of the notes that I took away from this morning.
201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. Let's open up the phone lines. Your thoughts as OTAs get underway here in East Rutherford, New Jersey. Lloyd is in Pennsylvania. Lloyd, what's happening?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Long time no call.
Well, good
it's been a while for a reason. I wanted to wait until I saw, all of the changes before I kind of made a decision on what I was looking forward to this season. And I've already seen a lot of progress, but they've taken basically the offensive line and just kind of replaced a lot of guys that were the same as what we already had. If Eric Flowers is able to make the switch over the right tackle, and then I think the offensive line has a slight upgrade. But the big difference is going to be Saquon Barkley in the running game. Actually, utilizing a running game that'll help both kill the clock and take some heat off the wide receivers and tight end. So I'm looking forward to that for next year.
I would say this. If Flowers works out at right tackle and is just okay, that offensive line has gone through a major upgrade. Not just a small one, but a major upgrade. Solder, Hernandez, you know, Jones is coming back, but he should be a year better. And Omame, just by virtue of the fact that they think he's going to be durable enough to stay on the field for 16 games, and we know he's a much better run blocker than John Jerry is, I mean, you're talking about at least three spots of a significant upgrade, not even counting any ability that Flowers shows to perform better than what Bobby Hart did last year.
Well, to sum it up, you're looking at three new players and then technically four players at new positions compared to last year's offensive
possibly
line.
Four position upgrades.
That's probably what we're looking at, barring any injuries or any dramatic changes.
So, you know, that's more than just a slight improvement. That's going to be significant.
Well, the reason why I say a slight upgrade is because last year, the way the line was configured, I think I called in and I complained about this to you before, but Coach McAdoo basically set up the beginning of the season to have an offensive line that was geared toward the pass. The run plays were few and far between, and there wasn't a lot of selection, so they were kind of predictable, and they just didn't use it that much. And as people got injured and they were forced to put other offensive linemen in, then you saw more progress out of Orleans Darkwood, and he was getting those yards, and they were being productive in the running the game, and then they went away from it for a little while.
Well, what you saw
toward the end of the year.
What you saw was a growth in the running game when DJ Fluker found his way into the lineup.
Right.
Because while Fluker was in there starting at right guard, they averaged 110 yards a game on the ground, approximately, which, quite frankly, is adequate. You'd like it to be a little higher. You'd like it to be 120, 125. You'd love it to be 130. But 110, that's adequate, you know, as opposed to when you're down in the 90 vicinity, you know, which is what the Giants have kind of become accustomed to the last few years.
Yeah. Now, the one thing that I was looking forward to was them re-signing DJ Fluker, and I didn't expect him to start, given that there were going to be a lot of replacements. But I don't think his contract with Seattle was that prohibitive. That we couldn't have signed him for our team at the same price. But they had different directions they wanted to go, and I get that. And I have one more point.
Okay, sorry, real quick, what else you got?
I saw this this special that somebody called in last week and talked about Kyle Lauletta being on a there were four YouTube episodes that varied between 5 to 7 minutes.
Correct. He was with Kirk Cousins. Yeah, I tweeted it out because I suggested that everybody should watch it. I thought it was a very interesting dialogue between the two.
Right. Actually, I think you're the reason why I ended up seeing it. I think I saw episode four first.
Okay.
And I went back and watched it from the beginning.
Yeah, episode four is the one where they really get into the X's and O's, and Lauletta is drawing up a play that he ran in college, and then Kirk is weighing in. But the other conversations are just about, you know, life in the NFL, and it was just, to me, a good conversation where you get to learn a little bit more about both quarterbacks.
Right. Now, the funny thing is, to me, if you could combine both Lauletta and Davis Webb into one quarterback, you've got a damn good starter.
Well, yeah. I mean, listen, you can say that about most guys. I'll take a little bit of him. I'll take a little bit of him.
I know.
I'll have my best quarterback.
I'll tell you what. Davis Webb doesn't need any help in that regard, but that's just my opinion.
Well, no, I haven't seen his footwork enough because, I mean, you guys get to see it more than we do, but it was just, in my head, combining the two. But what I'm looking forward to this year is with all of the additional pieces that we have on the offensive line, we have a new weapon at running back. Granted, hopefully everyone stays healthy. You got a new offensive coordinator, new defensive coordinator. Everything is new. So there's plenty of people out there that are saying that the Giants are going to be like a 9, 10, 11-win team. I have to see a few things first because you don't know how
well,
it's
I think everybody
gel.
Needs to see
it's
something.
It's going
to
take time.
Lloyd, I 100% agree with you and appreciate the phone call. I mean, listen, sit here and speculate all you want, but I mean, we have yet to see anything with the pads on. So, I mean, to start saying that, you know, this is a dramatic improvement, this is an area where they still need to work on, it's very hard to make those statements.
I believe the experts west of the Mississippi have the Giants for 6.5 wins, give or take, you know, depending upon which corner of the city you're standing on.
Yeah.
6.5 wins is what the folks out there are saying. You know, and I think that certainly is a reasonable number based on what the Giants have shown to this point. They clearly improved the roster. I don't think anybody would dispute that. The question becomes, how much will it improve? How healthy will they be? And some of the thin spots that they still have need to be addressed over the next couple of months, whether or not it's guys stepping up or potentially guys being added to the mix. Let's face it, Lance, you know, you can't right now with any certainty tell me the 53 guys that are going to be there week one.
No, not at all. I mean, listen, we talked about this even last year. Ross Cockrell was acquired right before the 53 was finalized. So there's going to be changes leading up right to week one. What was it, 2 years ago, they got rid of Jasper Brinkley. Remember, he initially made the roster.
Then he wound up coming back.
Yeah, because they brought in Josh Johnson. They brought in the third quarterback. Mm-hmm. So things like that, it evolves week in and week out and day in and day out all the way through training camp. So I'm with you there, Paul. I think that's extremely on point. The other thing, speaking of perhaps an area of concern right now on paper, and we've talked about this a lot, the cornerback position. Pat Shurmur did mention that William Gay has stood out from a leadership standpoint, because what he's been doing is he's been serving as an additional member of the coaching staff, mm-hmm. where he's on the sideline. Some of these young guys come over, and he's pointing things out based on what occurs during the course of practice. So that, I think, is encouraging, because you need somebody to really steer the ship within that room, considering there's so much youth and inexperience at that position behind the likes of an Eli Apple and a Janoris Jenkins.
Well, you're talking about a guy who's got more than a decade in this league and has started for the bulk of that time. So he has seen every style of offense, every style of receiver, knows every trick of the trade that every type of receiver can throw out there at you. And, you know, for me, yeah, I still think he's got some gas in his tank to play slot corner. I'm not so sure he can play boundary corner anymore. I think the Steelers pretty much kind of admitted that when they moved him inside last year, and then he didn't even play every game. But I do think he can play slot corner effectively, especially with the other skills that the Giants have in the secondary if those guys play to the level of their football card. But the other thing is, and I think this is very, very important, Deshaun Townsend, who was a Giants newcomer on the consistent staff.
He's the assistant DBs coach.
Right.
Yeah.
Was with the Steelers. And you know he must have given rave reviews to William Gay,
absolutely.
Not only in his ability to perform on the field, but must have said a billion good things about him in the locker room, in the defensive backs room, and how, hey, you know what? This guy can be an extension of the coaching staff on the field. And he can help some of these guys. Look, let's not kid ourselves. Collins is still a young player. Thompson is a young player. Adams is a young player. Apple is a young player. Dante Dion, if he makes it, is a young player. Jenkins is the only really old guy in that secondary. So let's not kid ourselves. There was room for a mature guy to come in there and take the leadership reins, you know, in his hands and say, I can help teach these guys some things. There was room for one of those guys.
Well, and that's why what they're seeing out of him right now as being an extension of the coaching staff is important.
Absolutely.
To your point, because even the majority of the starting unit in the secondary is young. They have not had a lot of experience on the field. And even a guy like Darian Thompson, who, you know, has been with the team, he's been hurt. So that has limited his exposure to being on the field with pads on. Mm-hmm. By the way, Townsend also crossed paths with Gay in Arizona. Not only did they cross paths
with
Pittsburgh,
the Cardinals
but
for a year.
Gay was on Arizona for a year in 2012. Townsend was the assistant DB's coach for that staff as well. So they have a long history, both as players together as well as coach versus player. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. 201-939-4513. AJ is in South Carolina. AJ, what's happening?
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I like what I hear for undrafted free agent Sean Chandler. I thought he had an interception.
Yeah, Sean Chandler, who we were talking about earlier, correct. And he's also a Temple guy, and Pat Shurmur was asked about, you know, when he was in Philly, did he sort of monitor him? And he said he's very familiar with him going back to his days when he's with the Eagles.
Let's not make any mistake about it, though. He's really going to have to show some worth on special teams to make the squad. Certainly a good start out here. He's shown some very nice things, but he's got a long way to go before he can be a truly NFL player.
One more thing before I go. Who is Nate Solder backup?
Backup and left tackle.
I know he's starting a left tackle.
Well, I mean, that's a good question right now, and appreciate the phone call,
AJ.
Okay,
I'll take my call.
You got it. I mean, certainly Chad Wheeler is a guy that is still in the mix,
yeah.
And I would probably pencil him in, Paul, as that swing guy competing at right tackle with Flowers, as well as the primary backup to Solder.
I would agree with that. When they ran second-team offensive line today, it was Wheeler at right tackle and Nick Becton, a holdover veteran from last year, hardly used. He was running as the left tackle, but you can be sure if they get to the regular season, Wheeler is going to be the third tackle and the swing guy who will sub for either side.
201-939-4513. Let's head back to the phone lines. Aaron is in Rochester. Aaron, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, guys? How y'all doing?
Long time no call. Doing well, Aaron.
I just wanted to ask, I like what the guys are doing, Gettleman and them. I like the everything they did in the offseason was tremendous. I just worried about the I'm worried about the third slot of cornerback, but y'all got me a little bit okay with William Gay. And my main question I had was, do y'all know anything about the mini camps when they open it up for the kids for like autograph and picture day?
Well, I think you're talking about training camp. You talk about training camp.
Yeah, mini camp is not open to the public.
Not open to the public. So you're looking at training camp, which we're not going to get to until late July, early August is probably when you're going to start to see those days.
Yeah, the Giants haven't released the schedule yet. There's a lot of talk that they're going to spend a week in Detroit prior to their preseason game to train out there with the Lions in dual practice sessions. Now, that has not been finalized nor confirmed, but that would be one less week that they would be here practicing in East Rutherford. We do know they'll start somewhere in the vicinity of the mid-20s in July. We believe, again, not confirmed, that maybe July 25th or so would probably be a good target date for them to begin practicing. But you will then have to wait until Giants.com posts the official schedule because not every one of the training camp practices is open to the public. Some of them are actually closed.
Yeah.
Because they have other events going on at the Meadowlands, which means they can't have Giants fans coming at the same time. Let's say that there's a Taylor Swift concert going on at the stadium. So, no, it happens.
Yeah.
It does happen. They have other events here, so they can't open it up to the fans because the parking lot becomes overcrowded.
I believe it.
So, in any event, but be watching for it. Trust me, as soon as I find word, I'll get it out on Twitter to you.
And one more thing, Paulie, I really would love you to consider being an offensive coordinator for us. I mean, you need to consider it. I mean, you're a guru, man. We need to see you out on that sideline someday.
Well, here's the good news. I am on the sideline most of the time during road games, behind a bench going up and down between the tens. But, no, I appreciate your time and your thoughts, and I thank you very much. But you know what? The lifespan of a coach and a GM, not nearly the lifespan of an announcer. So I like the seat where I am, if that's okay with you.
And Aaron, instead of the OC, he's the OG. I think the OG carries more weight than the OC anyway. So, you know, I wouldn't worry about him needing the title in that department. I appreciate the phone call.
All right.
Yes. The honorary OC, but the OG when it comes to our labels here.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm impressed that you threw out Taylor Swift. I thought maybe you were going to go with some other artist. I mean, you could have went anywhere in the spectrum. You could have even said Bruce Springsteen's performing at MetLife Stadium.
Instead, you went
Taylor Swift. I'm a little surprised.
I'm
impressed you're opening up your horizon to new music.
Well, a lot of young people are tuning into the show on the web
or on their
iPod, and so I'm trying to give them a young name they could recognize.
Okay. All right. I thought maybe this was also an inkling of what you tune in during your power walks. No?
No.
Okay.
No.
Right.
No.
I thought maybe the iPod was adding a little bit more in the rotation.
Power walks, folks, for those who really want to know.
Well, we're all dying to know.
You're going to get the Jersey Boys.
Okay.
Four Seasons.
Old school. Yeah.
You're going to get Springsteen.
Okay.
You're going to get a little Tim McGraw and Faith Hill.
Okay, country. Okay.
Really, really. Oh, man, they're awesome.
Okay.
Well, everybody knows Faith Hill is my celebrity crush.
Yes, you have mentioned that publicly.
She's just awesome.
Yes.
So that's what you usually get on
not a Motown guy?
I do like Motown.
I do
like Motown, but they don't make it onto the Power Walk selection.
They don't make it on? Okay, because you don't like the Four Tops. I think that's a nice rhythm to
Big Drifters guy.
Okay. All right.
Love Drifters.
Very nice. All right, we're learning. We're opening up. We're expanding our horizons. 201-939-4513. Let's head back to the line. Stas is in Washington. Stas, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, guys? How are you?
Doing all right. How are things with you?
Hi.
Good, good. Hey, so check this out. So last night, I'm watching the 2007 NFC Championship with my daughter, right? And this play, I'm watching this play, and it's crazy how current how you get conditioned as Giants fans now, because I know, obviously, we know what the outcome of this game. And I'm watching the Giants backed up on the third on their own 30-yard line, and Green Bay's in max blitz. They're setting the house. I see Eli Manning shift Hedgecock. Remember Hedgecock?
Sure do.
Shift him over to the right side. Snap the ball. Green Bay sends the house at them. The Giants, and I kind of cringe, like, oh, they're going to get him, right? Because I'm used to that, and they pick up the blitz. And it was like I got this feeling of relief, even though I know the outcome of this game. And then Eli Manning zips the ball down the sideline, 15 yards, hits Plaxico-Burris to get the first down. And I started thinking to myself, the real X factor in our O-line right now is Omame. Because if we know what we got in Ace Oder. You know, I hope we know what we got with Willie Hernandez. We know that our center is going to be serviceable. But if all we have to worry about is a right tackle, we can support that.
Well, he's good.
If our right tackle is less than serviceable, let's just say whoever it is, you could always shift protection one way if you only have to worry about one way.
Again, you're going to be a strong side right formation anyway, which means he's going to have tight end help on that side most of the time.
Exactly. And I started thinking, like, you know, Omame is the X factor. If Omame comes out and just holds his own at guard, and we don't have to worry about him being the help for the right tackle, and he can make sure that he's ensuring that the pocket doesn't close up on Eli Manning, because it was a thing of beauty just to see Eli Manning stand tall back there and be able to plant his feet and drive a ball down.
Yeah.
I just haven't seen that in a long time.
Isn't it amazing how young Eli Manning looks when he has pass protection?
Yeah, well, that was also 11 years ago, though. Let's put things in perspective a little.
You get the point.
I just feel like the X factor has to be Omame, because I feel like from left to right, we kind of know what we got. Omame would be the one person that I'd say to me, I think it's a good pickup, but it's to be seen, like, you know, because, you know, he was also replaced, you know? And so I look at it like, okay, if he comes out and performs at a decent level, we should be pretty solid having, you know making with having Saquon in the backfield and making safeties have to respect that.
Yeah.
You know, I really feel like this guy, Saquon Barkley, should get about 1,800 complete yards.
Understand.
Like total yards.
Understand that I want to make this clear to anybody who doesn't have awareness of this. Yeah, Omame was allowed to go free agent by the Jaguars, but they replaced him with the highest paid guard in football and an all-pro in Norwell. And so that is not at all to demean or disrespect Omame, because Omame is an upgrade for the Giants, but Norwell is an upgrade over Omame. And I think everybody would understand that. I mean, just because, he doesn't match up to Norwell doesn't mean he's not any good.
No, I agree. I'm more concerned that he was an upgrade and he was a left guard, and now he's going to be more than likely going to right
some
guard.
Right
he's a young rookie.
Well, he started
played
off,
some right guard.
Yeah, he started off his career as a right guard, and then he moved to left guard with Jacksonville.
Aware.
So he's got experience on both sides, so they can experiment. Yeah, moving him to both sides, which they are going to do during the course of OTAs and training camp. I mean, to me, I think the X factor, Stas, is more just the stability on the right side of the offensive line. Because if you go back to years past, you know, you've had movement with Jerry and Fluker and Hart, where if they could get to a point, Paul, where you've got Omame or Hernandez, whoever they solidify in that right guard spot, playing next to Eric Flowers or Wheeler, whoever wins that right tackle spot, and it's consistent and there's no injuries. That, to me, is going to be huge for the Giants, because it's really been a game of musical chairs over the last few years.
You know, here's the one problem, and, of course, reality does not allow this to be a variable anymore. I remember Carl Nelson back in the 80s said to me, and this was before free agency and all of the movement that we have in the league today, he said, you know, it really takes almost into your third season as an offensive line unit for those five to really develop airtight, crazy glue kind of chemistry. Well, guess what? In today's NFL, you can't do that anymore.
It's hard. You don't have the.
You
got to
do
exactly.
it. You got to do it in like a month.
Yeah.
You know, you got a month of training camp, and then guess what? Week one is here, and you better be ready to play. And
not only that,
you know,
Paul, It's not just a month of training camp. They got a diluted training camp.
Yes.
Back in the day, your training camp at least gave you real physicality. You could scrimmage against yourself and go full-on, full contact and work on those techniques. Right now, they're punching a ball.
Well, that's why, Stas, that's why I'm saying the health of the right side of the offensive line is going to be so important, because think about all the reps you get in games. That's where you build the chemistry, because you're not doing a lot of it during the week, and you're certainly not doing a lot of it during training camp.
We haven't talked to Coach Shermer about this because it's too early to do so, but I would invite you to pay very close attention to how many snaps the starting five offensive linemen get during the four preseason games. Because in my mind, they should get more than what you normally might consider giving them.
Yeah, I know. I think that's certainly a valid point, especially, you know, you're going to look to give the quarterbacks behind Eli Manning as much experience. You might as well put them behind an offensive line that could give them an opportunity to survey the field and throw the ball. Yeah.
Actually, Eli's always been a heady quarterback. Like, he's never been, I got wheels. He can outthink you, but you got to protect him. And that's always, like, I've always been frustrated when you hear these commentators, oh, Eli Manning's on decline, Eli Manning's this. And I'm like, well, if you look at every other stat, he's also hit all the time. And he, listen, for Eli Manning to get hit, as much as he's getting hit, and still have the second fastest or third fastest release of the ball, that's alarming. Like, you got to really look at these factors. Protect that man, and I know for a fact, he still has about 3 years in him, easy, if you give him protection.
Well, that's the idea.
Anyway,
all right,
guys,
Stas, appreciate the phone call.
Thanks.
Got it. Thanks so much for weighing
in. Good call.
We've talked about this time and time again. The factors around the quarterback are going to influence the quarterback's production. And Eli Manning is not unique, Paul, because if you've watched Phillip Rivers in years where he hasn't had an offensive line, the offensive production has also diminished. Joe Flacco is an example when Ray Rice was lost and their offensive line was banged up. Ryan Tannehill, when the Dolphins gave him a good offensive line, he actually was productive. When he didn't have an offensive line, he was a completely different quarterback.
It sounds so simplistic to say if the quarterback doesn't have protection, or if he doesn't have the receivers, or if he doesn't have the running game, you know, what is he supposed to do back there? Well, what makes the guys really terrific and what has made Eli terrific is that in most cases, when maybe one of those areas wasn't as up to snuff as it needed to be, he could still function and help you win games and be competitive. But what we've seen these last few years is a whole conglomeration of things falling apart around him. Not just one.
Of course.
You know, not just, oh, pass pro wasn't very good. Not just, oh, isolated, the running game wasn't very good. Not so isolated, they didn't have a lot of good receivers. No, all of these things together around Eli have basically created a perfect storm to do everything to sabotage him, if you will. And to be honest, it's really to his credit that he has not allowed the quarterback play to drop as much as the other factors probably should have, to be honest with you.
Well, and listen, there's always going to be exceptions to the rule. Aaron Rodgers, though, is pretty much the lone exception because he's been playing with an offensive line that has been far from stable over the course of his career. But the reason
Unique player.
Yeah, he's a unique player, exactly. The guy's mobility enables him to extend plays he can create on his own, and he also probably, in my opinion, throws the ball from one side of the field to the other more effectively than any other quarterback in the league.
Incredible.
So when you could do
Incredible
that,
arm.
Yeah, you can patch up those holes, and you don't make them seem as bigger as perhaps they are on a weekly basis.
And I haven't looked at the drop counts over the last few years, but it just seems to me the Packers are one of those teams that doesn't usually drop the ball very much.
Well, he's
their guys will hold on to it.
And he's had the blessing of being surrounded by a lot of good polished wide receivers. Even the young guys who have come in, Davante Adams, for example,
exactly.
has made a name for himself fairly quickly. So you combine that, tight end play, too, has helped him as well. Let's head back to the phone lines, and unfortunately we got to turn to Charlie in Portland, Maine. Charlie, what's happening?
Hi, Charlie.
Hey, guys.
How we doing,
hey,
Charlie?
Hey, look, I'm still really concerned about the offensive line.
Stunning. Stunning development out of Charlie in Portland, Maine. Did not see that coming. Blown away by that statement.
For the simple reason, we have no depth. God forbid, if Soldier goes down for two or three games, what do we got? What do we got?
Charlie,
we don't have any depth.
I think you're being short-sighted here because I agree with you at tackle right now. If Flowers works out, then Wheeler's the third guy, and that could potentially still be okay. But where it gets really slight okay, is the fourth tackle. So if Flowers doesn't work out and Wheeler has to start, now Nick Becton's your next guy up. I understand your concern there, okay? But they've got plenty of guards and they've got some centers here. So I don't necessarily think depth around the entire line is as big a deal as you think it is.
Yeah, plus, I mean,
well,
Jerry, for example, has starting experience.
Tackle.
Well, then just say tackle. Say depth of tackle concerns you.
Tackle.
Don't say offensive line.
Well, and Charlie, in fairness, listen, we've had this conversation in previous years because you've made the same point. And maybe there was more validity in previous seasons because there wasn't nearly as much depth. But this is what I've told you. I've said, look across the NFL. You show me every team that's got a starting caliber left tackle as the backup. So when the starter goes down, they feel fine that everything is going to be smooth sailing.
Charlie's spoiled, though, because I remember the days when Bob Whitfield was here, Sean Andrews was here, Sean Locklear was here.
A lot of guys would start.
Boy,
experience.
It was great to have those guys as the swing tackle. That doesn't happen in this league anymore.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is it's not just the Giants. It's a lot of teams.
We have to bring in a vet for this mandatory. How about I want to ask you one thing, Paul. You know, we supposedly signed this guy named Bunch from the Arena Football League. He's a guy who had a lot of potential. He's never lived up to it. He's like, you know, 6'6", 300
Let me look at his vitals. Yeah,
he's
let me look
guard,
at his vitals.
Yeah, out of UCLA.
Yeah. So have you been watching him? Have you seen anything from this guy? Do you think he has some potential to fill in as a swing tackle or as a backup with some good depth or – have you not seen enough yet to know?
I did not even watch him today, to be perfectly frank with you. I was watching too many other things to really give him a look. They listed him at 6'5", 320.
Right.
Okay, that's what they're listing him as. They also are listing him as Lance just said, as a guard. They're not listing him as a tackle.
A guard? We got so many guards, for God's sake.
I know.
Please,
I know.
Tackles.
I know.
God.
I know. I'm not going to disagree with that point, Charlie.
Well, they had Adam Biznavati, and then he was waived. Detroit claimed him because you were looking at Biznavati, Wheeler, Flowers. And then remember, you know, Flowers can still serve as also a backup at left tackle, too. He's an option, given he played there. You can't cross that off.
Right.
You know, just like Justin Pugh was moved.
Well,
I'm not saying that it's in the ideal situation.
You're
going to
give this man a heart attack. Will you not talk about Flowers at left tackle, Lance?
That would be my goal on this program, to give him a heart attack.
That's not nice.
Well, I know, but you know what? I can't hold myself back from the zingers. But anyway, getting back to the point at hand here. Yeah, I agree with you that there is some concern because there's not a whole lot of substance behind Nate Solder in terms of just pure experience. Even a guy like Wheeler.
Yeah.
I mean, Wheeler hasn't had a lot of on-field game experience. So I get where you're coming from, Charlie. That's why they've got to start evaluating these guys once you get to training camp and see what they could provide.
Charlie, trust me, Gettleman is a guy who loves the trenches. You know that. You see that he's already done what he could to improve the team to this point. Don't you think his radar is out there right now? That if there's any veteran who pops free who he thinks can help, he's going to talk to that guy. You got to believe that.
Well, Charlie, I'm surprised you went through this entire conversation without naming a guy that's clearly on the market right now that plays tackle.
There's really not.
Well, no, there's a guy on the market that's played left tackle and he's suited up. There you go.
Just waiting to come in.
Put that one aside. Put that one aside. You must admit the list is sparse.
Well, wait a minute. I'm surprised. Why'd you shortchange him? He actually now has 3 Super Bowls. I can't believe. Oh, look, Charlie's not even. Charlie's now cutting him short on the
rings. He got a ring with the Eagles.
He got another ring.
You're right.
Charlie, you could boost his resume now. What's wrong with you?
No, he didn't get 2 with the Giants. He didn't get 207. He wasn't with the Giants in 2007, was he?
Are we shortchanging him? No. Okay. No.
You're fooling me. You're right. I'm getting caught up in him. I'm getting caught up in him trying to zing you. He
Correct.
Came right
yes,
after
2009,
that.
2009. He was not on
he
the.
He came after
team.
That.
So he's got 2. I thought Charlie had mentioned 2 with the Giants. That's why.
I thought he was
overlooking.
Oh, you sucked me into that.
Well, okay. Now
go ahead, Charlie. Is that all?
Hey, all I'm saying is, hey, Paul, if you get to ask Shermer a question or Gettleman a question, ask him. What do you think of your depth on your tackle situation? Just ask him that.
Okay. It's kind of early to tell, don't you think?
Well,
I appreciate your concern, but until these guys actually get out and start hitting, I mean, any of these fellas who we don't know about, we're not going to know about until they hit.
Yeah, well, at least maybe he'll say, well, I really like this guy or this guy or that guy.
All right, we'll see what we can do.
Confidence in, like, Howell or
Well, and
or
Howell,
whoever.
I'm glad you brought him up because I was literally – I was just perusing the roster and I wanted to bring him up because he's one of those undrafted guys.
Very raw.
Out of Missouri. No, raw, but
– Very raw.
I think intriguing just to see what he can do. Sometimes a guy will surprise you. And I'm not making bold declarations here, but remember – Andrew Norwell was a guy in Carolina that nobody knew anything
Realistically
about.
Realistically speaking, okay? I think he's going to need at least a year of coaching before he's got a chance to really do anything. He needs a lot of work. And that's not to disparage him in any way, but it looked to me like at Missouri, when he, by the way, was a platoon tackle his last season at Missouri, it didn't look like they did a lot to prepare him for the NFL. Let's just say that.
Well, but let's say this. If he is a year away of coaching, then that means that on May 21st, 2019, when Charlie calls up with the same concern, your answer could be Howell's ready to go.
Maybe.
Okay? So there is a silver lining to this
Thank
conversation.
Thank you, Charlie. We'll talk
Thank
to you soon.
Charlie. Yes.
Okay, guys.
Bye.
Absolutely. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants chat. On Twitter. Let's take a look at Twitter also because I know there's a lot of you that weigh in on the conversation. You have an opportunity to get to the
For
folks.
Those who don't know, yes. Hal's coming out of Missouri, 6'8", 330 pounds. He is quite the physical specimen, you know, in a way.
Oh, he's a presence.
A little softer, but he's got the similar build and makeup to Solder, to be perfectly frank with you. But, again, he was a platoon tackle. He started as a junior and was a platoon tackle last year at Missouri. And it just looked like he needs a tremendous amount of coaching and technique work. And I just don't think realistically you can expect to get him up to snuff in just a couple of months, especially given that the CBA won't allow them to do much.
I mean, listen, clearly Flowers and Wheeler are the two options as backups at left tackle, as it stands right
now. There's
no
question.
Without even seeing anything on the field in padding right now. I mean, those are your number two options.
Yeah.
And then you see what you can get beyond that out of some of these other young guys. But if you just look over the roster right now, Paul, and you just look at all the tackles, it's Solder, it's Wheeler, it's Flowers, and it's Howell. I mean, those are all four of the guys that are listed at tackle. Everybody else is mainly an interior offensive
lineman. Well, Nick Becton was running second-team left tackle this morning.
Now, I know Becton has seen work. I'm just curious because on the roster here, they have Becton. I'm looking at the one online, if you find it quicker on your sheet, because I don't believe that they are listing him.
They are listing him strictly as OL, offensive line.
Okay, so sort of a generic label.
At 6'6", 322.
More of a reason why we're probably going to see him, I would say, at guard, maybe end tackle, as they continue to line him up. So he's one of those guys that falls into the tweener, the in-between range. But everybody else, for the most part, maybe you could flip-flop him at guard. You can move somebody maybe over to center. But not a lot of these guards, to me, have the experience that you're going to shift them all the way outside the tackle.
The interior offensive line, there are enough of guys here who I believe can adequately fill out the depth chart. It is the tackle spot that's thin. Charlie's right about that. But you got to be specific when you make the comment. So I think we got him squared away.
Absolutely. There's another question on Twitter here from at NYGman182 about the joint practices between the Lions and the Giants. And I know you alluded to it. It's pure speculation at this point. There
nothing
no
has been confirmed
nothing.
Or solidified.
Correct. But if you just want to look at a comparison, remember when Tom Coughlin was still here, they did a joint Giants-Bengals practice. Remember
yes.
when they went out to Cincy. So that was done not too long ago, and that was built in connection to a preseason game.
By the way, the Detroit preseason game is out in Michigan on August the 17th, so it would be that week leading into that game. The Lions have been very public and vocal about saying they are looking for a preseason practice partner for one of their preseason weeks. Again, the Giants have not finalized anything that they're going to be the team. The Lions, though, have been very public about saying they'd like somebody, which is what I think has led to a lot of speculation, because obviously if you're going to have somebody in, it's got to be a home preseason game. And that is a home preseason game for Detroit.
And it would also be two teams that have brand-new head coaches, so they're looking for some different looks.
And don't
looks.
Play each other during the regular season.
Yep. So it makes sense. Considering what we've seen across the NFL, I think to me it's been a trend. I mean, you've got a number of them popping up every single offseason where teams just feel like they could get more out of going up against other players than their own players. You get tired of doing
Giants
it.
Giants over the years, I've seen them. Well, they did it with the Jets the one year up at Albany, and the Jets caused trouble, which didn't surprise me. They also had the Bengals, as you mentioned, in Cincinnati. Many years ago, they were up at Bryant University in Rhode Island and had a dual practice with Belichick and the Patriots. That goes back quite a ways. But those are the only three dual practice sessions that I can remember in recent memory between the Giants and other teams. Maybe, as you say, as it becomes more popular, the Giants will get involved more into that deal.
Let's head back to the phone lines. Victor is in Florida. Vic, what's happening?
How are you guys doing?
What's up, Vic?
Actually, this is a question for Paul because he's an old-timer, so am I. I'm happy that the Giants drafted all these top players, which I think they will improve the Giants tremendously. But, Paul, you remember Spider Lockhart,
love
right?
him. Number 43.
Okay, listen to this. In 1980, I met him, and I spoke to him in Mama Leone in New York. You remember where they are? I don't know if they're still there or not.
Okay.
And he told me, we were talking about, when the hell are the Giants ever going to get into the Super Bowl? Because, you know, I was, you know, really waiting for them to do something good.
Yeah.
And he says, let me tell you something. Within the next 5 years, they're going to win the first Super Bowl, and before you go, they'll win six. And that marked my words. And I shook his hand. He gave me his autograph, and I said, bye-bye, Spider. I love you. So I figured I'd let you guys know that.
Yeah,
okay, Paul?
Well, the shame of it is, Vic, Spider came down with cancer and passed away during the 1986 calendar year, so he never got to see them win Super Bowl 21 against the Denver Broncos.
I know.
I never got a chance to meet Spider, and I'll be honest with you, I'm sad about it because I hear what a great guy he was, a legend around these Giants parts for sure, and any of his teammates who I've come to become friendly with over the years all tell me just the finest things for him. That's why it was George Martin, the defensive end,
yeah,
who suggested,
yes,
to the Giants,
yes,
at the time in 86, can we memorialize him with the spider patch on the shoulder, which, of
yes,
course, you know,
right.
you,
number
you,
43,
which you know,
anyway,
is on
listen,
all the photos
guys,
from the Super Bowl.
Thank you for taking my call. I love you guys. I love your show. And I hope the Giants will, at least, I'll tell you what, they'll make the playoffs this year, but next year, Super Bowl. That's my take.
All right, Vic.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate
good,
it.
Vic.
Lockhart was a spindly, wiry, undersized free safety who made several All-Pro Pro Bowl teams. In those days, I can't remember if they differentiated All-Pro and Pro Bowl.
I can look it up.
He was on, like, I believe, three All-Pro Pro Bowl teams. Not All-Pros, but three Pro Bowl teams. Heck of a player. And the thing about it was they called him Spider because he was so thin and wiry and spindly. But he hit. I mean, you would have loved him, Lance, because, you know, the diminutive frame. But he stuck his nose in there, man. He went after guys. Never afraid at all. I mean, I watched him as a player.
Yeah.
But never got to meet him, unfortunately. And that's a regret.
Two Pro Bowls.
Two?
Looking up. Yep.
Okay.
Played for the Giants from 1965 to 1975. Third round pick. 13th round pick.
Yes.
Excuse me. In 1965. That was when the draft was about 17 years it took.
Tell me about it.
To get through.
Yeah,
anyway.
Spider, a heck of a player, though. Heck of a player. I mean, during those, that let's face it, that's a very dim period in Giants history. And he was one of the few guys who you could hang your hat on because he was going to go all out every play, every game, and was really fun to watch.
Yeah, he was a Pro Bowler for the second time in 1968. That was his second time. So, really, he became a Pro Bowler immediately because if he came into the league in 1965, Paul, and his second Pro Bowl appearance was 68, I mean, right out of the gates, he made an impact.
He was, and even after that, he was still a very good player, you know. And in fact, I you could probably argue that, I mean, I again, he wasn't the biggest guy in the world. He was rather diminutive, and that's why he eventually retired when he did. He probably had some more time left. I would love to have seen him play at Giant Stadium in 76 when he opened the new building. He never made it to that point. He retired after the 75 season, which was the 1 year the Giants played at Shea Stadium. Never got to play at the Meadowlands. Neither did Ron Johnson, who was the superstar running back, twice 1,000-yard rusher during those times. 75, Shea Stadium was his last season, but he had bad knees. He was badly beaten up and was just injured to the point where he had had enough. Spider probably had some more mileage in him.
First Pro Bowl appearance was 1966, as I'm looking at it. So second season in the league, he immediately made the Pro Bowl. It makes you think of what Landon Collins has done so early in his career. After he
different
arrived.
Body type, for sure.
Yeah, different body type, but I'm just saying the immediacy of the impact across the roster. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. You can also weigh in on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. If you can't get to the phone, certainly we want to hear from you on Twitter as we are recapping OTA number one. In case you're just joining us, Pat Shurmur did address the media earlier today, and we went over some highlights earlier in the program. Eli Apple and Patrick Omame were scheduled to be meeting with the media as we speak right now. And Jonathan Stewart also addressed the media, Paul, and we had an opportunity to hear him before we had to come in for the show. And, you know, speaking of durability and how many more years and mileage you get out of him, he was asked a lot of questions about, well, you're 31 years old right now, and you played with the Panthers, you split time with D'Angelo Williams. You know, what does he think he has left in the tank? And, you know, he feels by splitting time with Carolina and not having the lead back role every single year, that that will at least allow him to smoothly transition in with the likes of Wayne Gallman as well as Saquon Barkley here with the Giants.
Well, you're talking about a guy who, again, like William Gay, he's got the better part of a decade in the NFL, has seen it all, has been a primary back, has rushed for 1,000 yards in this league before,
yes,
twice in his first couple of years, ran for 10 touchdowns in a given season. In fact, even the last few years with
he's
the Panthers, he was a touchdown gobbler, if you will.
With McCaffrey.
So, you know, he has performed in a number of different roles for a Carolina team that has had some pretty productive offenses. And certainly, Dave Gettleman understood not only what he could bring to the table on the field, but what he could bring to the locker room. And I said the first day when he was signed, he will be a good character guy for the young fellas in that running back's room. And I don't think there's any doubt about it.
Yeah, and they could use that because, I mean, Wayne Gallman's young and Barkley just arrived. So, remember, Paul Perkins.
And there's no more Vereen and no more Darkwell.
Yeah. So you take that into consideration. Stewart fits that role, at least, regardless
no
of
question.
How to utilize him on the field. And to your point, I mean, you're talking about a running back who's had at least six touchdowns in each of the last three seasons with Carolina. He had nine in 2016.
And can we not forget, Saquon Barkley is coming off a year where he had a bunch of touches at Penn State. Okay, everybody thinks he's going to put up great numbers, and I understand that. So do I. I know the Giants certainly hope he does. But the guy's coming into his rookie NFL season. How many rookies have you seen in your short career covering the National Football League that comes the 10th, 12th week of the season, they hit that rookie wall? I mean, all of a sudden, it's like, wait a minute. We played 12 games in college. We didn't really have an off season because we trained like hell for the combine. Then we got drafted. Then we had to go through whatever we had to go through to get coached up. And now we're playing games. All of a sudden, it gets to the 10th, 12th week of the NFL season. A lot of these rookies, their tongue is hanging down to the floor. So if Stewart can take some of that load off, especially some of the blood and guts smashing between the tackles and short yardage and along the goal line, if he can take some of that away from Barkley, that might allow Barkley to preserve a little juice for 16 games.
Well, and in today's NFL, it's very rare that you have one back that does have
sure.
all the heavy lifting. So, you know, the Giants, obviously, it's a copycat league. They're looking around the league. I think in an ideal
well,
circumstance.
Gallman, too, can help.
Yeah, Gallman can help as well. But, you know, the model right now, I think, is what the Saints did last year, Paul, with Mark Ingram and then drafting Alvin Kamara. You know, that to me is the ideal situation for most teams because, number one, they're two different backs, okay? Their style of running is different.
Yep.
So that is a perfect complement. And then number two, you saw that both guys made the Pro Bowl, which that was unique, and that doesn't mean that you have to have two guys make the Pro Bowl, but you've had production when both of them were on the field, regardless of the different formations. And when you can mix and match running backs and the production stays the same, you're doing something right. And that's where I think the Giants want to get that, whether it's Gallman, whether it's Stewart, whether it's Barkley, the defense is on its toes because they don't necessarily know what the play is going to be.
Right.
And all of those guys can pick and choose whatever options they have based on the play call. And that's where I think the Giants want to get. So, you know, Stewart to me is not just this guy that's going to be a teacher in the room, you know, giving direction in film study. I still think he could be a red zone threat. And somebody that, like you said, even if he takes three or four carries away from each guy, hey, you know what? Over the course of the season, that adds up.
Well, let me put to you this way. Stewart can catch the ball out of the backfield. It's not like he has
not utilized to do that as much.
Not as much.
But he has the skill set to
do it. But he's got the skill set to do it. And he certainly knows how to pass protect. Okay? But look at the Giants right now. You don't know on any given play if Ingram's going to be a tight end or a wide receiver. So that can be a little bit of a matchup problem for a defensive coordinator. I don't think you know on any given play what Barkley's going to do. Is Barkley going to carry the ball or is he going to wind up going out to catch a pass?
Little threat.
In fact, quite frankly, is he going downfield on a wheel route? Don't even consider that, oh, if he doesn't run it, it's going to be a little check down or
no,
a little dump off. No, he can go down. So that's downfield. That's a big deal. So, you know, you're looking at the potential of Ingram and Barkley at any given play. If they're both on the field at the same time, coordinators and players are going to have to figure out what are they doing on this play. Are they tight ends and running backs or are they wide receivers?
I think Goldman could catch the ball as well. Yeah,
now, he's got to hold on to it a little bit better.
But there's potential there.
And so, again, the more versatility that you have in the skill positions in particular, the more headaches you give to the defense.
Nick is in Bayville. Nick, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Hi.
Doing well, Nick.
Hey, I want to backpedal just a little bit. I caught you guys talking about Eli earlier. I'm a huge Eli supporter. I absolutely have nothing but love for him. I want to bring it back. When they did an interview with Snacks, I saw where Snacks kind of compared him to LeBron. I don't know if you guys saw that.
I don't remember seeing that.
Yeah.
No, he kind of went on a comparison that, you know, it's almost it doesn't matter what Eli what numbers Eli puts up. Now, Eli put up numbers, and they could be all right numbers, but for some other quarterback, for instance, you know, Dak or somebody else, they're phenomenal numbers. He did a great job this season. But when it comes to Eli, he did okay. They're just all right numbers.
Well,
I kind of hate how that, you know, like, it's almost like I understand it's expected of Eli because of, you know, I like to say his caliber, but it's kind of like no matter what the guy does, like what does he have to do to kind of be looked at as, you know, a great quarterback?
Well, I think it comes down.
It depends on who you're talking to. To be perfectly honest, only foolish people don't look at Eli Manning as a great quarterback. Those opinions are irrelevant and don't matter because they don't know what they're talking about. The guy's won two MVPs in the Super Bowl. Okay, what more do you want?
Well, and I think...
Exactly, but, and that's kind of what Snacks was saying in this interview. It was on... I might have been on, like, First Take with Skip and Shannon or something. But he was just saying, you know, it's kind of like same thing with LeBron. You know, he puts up great numbers, and it's not really, you know, it wasn't great because it was LeBron. But if it was anybody else, they're phenomenal numbers, and that's how I kind of feel about Eli.
Well, but I mean,
the guy can carry a team on his back.
Well,
and it's like,
I think it's a little different with LeBron too because of the whole GOAT debate. I mean, nobody's making a claim that Eli Manning's the greatest quarterback of all time. So, I mean, the standards are a little bit different. I don't think the criticism is necessarily the same. But what I would say is, you know, with Eli Manning and any other quarterback in this league, Nick, you're judged based on the production of the entire offense because the quarterback shoulders so much of the load. So last season in particular, you know, it's not just Eli. I mean, everybody's numbers were down across the board. And part of that was because they had major injuries to key positions and key players. But if you do look at Eli Manning's numbers last season, I don't think it's crazy for people to not necessarily crown him given the fact that, I mean, he had thrown for over 4,000 yards. If you just look at him from a statistical standpoint, he had thrown for at least 4,000 yards in each of the previous three seasons. He only had just below 3,500 last season. He had 19 touchdown passes when each of the three previous seasons he had at least 26. So, I mean, the numbers statistically were down last year. I mean, to me, it's not crazy to say, you know, well, Eli shouldn't be considered statistically a top five guy.
Here's the thing. Okay, I understand his point, and I'm totally on board with his point, but he is also right. Eli Manning does not statistically put up phenomenal numbers, and I've said this 1,000 times. I'm going to say it again. It's thanks to your analytics people and your fantasy football people why Eli Manning does not get the credit he deserves because he is not a fantasy football quarterback, and if you're playing fantasy football,
and Nick, we're going to let you go on that noise.
You shouldn't draft him, okay?
Yeah.
If you want to win a football game, especially a big football game in the postseason, you want Eli Manning on your team. But if you're trying to win FanDuel or one of those fantasy games, you don't want Eli Manning. But see, the entire world is so enamored with fantasy football and with analytics people that they don't give credit where it's due. Let me tell you something. Football Perspective put out a tweet the other day. They said after a down 2017, Eli Manning now has a 65.1 era-adjusted career passing rating, the same as Drew Bledsoe and Jim Plunkett. And I said to myself, okay, so Bledsoe and Plunkett, you want to equate Eli Manning to those two guys? Yeah, Eli Manning's won two Super Bowl MVPs. Those guys didn't. So why don't you get off the comparison? It's ridiculous.
Well,
case closed.
I think statistics don't tell the whole story.
Of course they
don't.
That's
the problem. And statistics don't tell the whole story in any sport. Football's not unique. And here's the perfect example.
Phil Simms did not have awesome stats either. Phil Simms is a borderline Hall of Famer. Eli is a Hall of Famer. In my mind, I'm sorry. He's going. I'm not going to argue with anybody on that. It's a done deal. And Simms is a borderline Hall of Famer. And the only reason Simms isn't getting in is because his stats don't indicate it. Phil did not have gaudy stats. But if you know anything about football and you watch the guy play every single weekend, you know Phil Simms absolutely deserves much stronger consideration than he's given.
Well, and I wanted to give out a perfect statistic as to why the stat doesn't tell the whole story. I believe I'm right with the year, Paul. 2010, when Eli had 25 interceptions, wasn't that the year where there were at least three or four off of deflections of wide receivers' hands, if memory serves me correct? I don't know if you, off the top of your head, remember that. I believe it was 2010, because 13 he had 27, but I don't think it was 2013. I believe it was a little bit earlier in his career. And 2010, I distinctly remember 25 interceptions, and most people are going to look at that number, they're going to be like, well, 25 interceptions is high, and it is a high number. But if you watched all the games, you would remember, yeah, well, if Eli's throwing it to a wide receiver, and it's right where the wide receiver's hands are, and it goes off the fingertips of the wide receiver, is that because of a bad decision on the quarterback, or is that because of a game situation?
In 2013, Eli threw 27 picks.
Yeah.
I remember doing film study on those picks, okay? Nine of them were because either Reuben Randle failed to run the right route, had the ball deflected off his hands, or he just stood there and didn't fight for the ball and let the defensive back have it. Nine of the 27.
Well, that's why you have to know the scenarios.
You have to watch the game and understand the game. You can't just look at the numbers, which is what fantasy folks do and what analytics people do.
And there are guys that certainly earn a reputation because of their high passing numbers, and more often than not, those quarterbacks are very good. I'm not saying that stats are completely misleading, but I think if you're going to evaluate a guy over the course of his career, you really have had to have watched some of those games and seen how those games developed and played out to get a better feel for what the quarterback does. So that is going to wrap up today's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Stay locked to Giants.com. We'll be up and running each and every day through Thursday this week because it is the Memorial Day weekend holiday. Mm-hmm. So there will be no show on Friday, but we'll have one Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at noon Eastern. And Giants.com will have full coverage of all press conference from today's OTA. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Monday right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.